Hebrews chapter 6, verses 13 to 20. It's 1204 of the Church Bibles. God made his promise to Abraham. Since there was no one greater for him to swear by, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you and give you many descendants. And so, after waiting patiently, Abraham received what was promised. Men swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what is said and puts an end to all argument. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath. God did this so that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope offered to us may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain, where Jesus, who went before us, has entered on our behalf. He has become a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. God bless to us that reading. Word. I'm not going to speak particularly about that. Just very briefly, I wanted to share with you. Can I say thank you to everybody who prayed for us on Thursday? Rachel's grandmother's funeral. It was a really, really fascinating experience. So Rachel's grandmother, who I was exceptionally fond of, had actually written what she wanted done in her funeral. Now this is, and I'm sure Derek will back me up on this is rare. It would be good if everyone did this, because it would make my life and everyone else's life an awful lot easier, and you wouldn't have your children arguing over what you want. This would just be there. But there were certain things. And all I had to do, once I received the little package from my mother-in-law, was work out what Floss's message actually was. And it became really, really clear. So the first hymn was How Great Thou Art. Then we had Floss's own reminiscences and her final words of what she wanted to say to everyone in that room. I was quite worried when I saw the title, because Floss was a fierce lady, rather formidable, and I was wondering what was going to come at the end of, and you need to sort yourself out, and you need to do this, and you need to do that. But that wasn't the case. What it said at the end, and I'm going to be able to do it now without choking up like I did on Thursday, what it said at the end was, so in all of my life, I've learned that you pray and you trust in God. You go through hard times and you come through better because of them. And for everything else, you leave it in the hands of God. So that was her message. Then, the next piece of paper I open is, I want this read at my funeral. Okay. It was the words of Thy Word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path by Amy Grant. So in which the words are, nothing will I fear, etc. Reinforcing the point. Then the next hymn was, Father, I place into your hands the things I cannot do. Father, I place my friends and family, etc., etc. All about trusting God. I wish I could write a service as solid as that. And the final piece of music that she insisted on having as she left was by a country singer, and it was called My Forever Friend. And it's all about Jesus and how he will never let you go. Well, the sermon pretty much wrote itself. Floss is trying to get you all to understand something. For those of you that think she was just a fierce, formidable old woman, and she was. she really wants you to know that you can't do this without God. You can't do this without Jesus in your life and trusting him. And that particular reading is about you've got to have the hope that God is with you and cling on to him through the difficulties and the hard times. But I just want to say thank you for all of you who prayed for us. It went well. I managed to not offend anybody. And if I did, then I could blame it all on Floss. So it was fine. But yeah, and Rachel had to do the reading, and she did really well. So, very proud of her. And the children sat beautifully for the entire service, which I was blown away by, to be honest. So there you go. We're going to sing Standing on the Promises of Christ My King. I like about that hymn is it will stick with you for the rest of the week, whether you like it or not. Our second reading comes from Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 1 to 14. Page 788 of the Church Bibles. This is the text of the letter that the prophet Jeremiah sent from Jerusalem to the surviving elders among the exiles and to the priests, the prophets, and all the other people Nebuchadnezzar had carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. This was after King Jehoiakim and the queen mother, the court officials and the leaders of Judah and Jerusalem, the craftsmen and the artisans had gone into exile from Jerusalem. He entrusted the letter to Elisha, son of Shaphan, and to Gemariah, son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent to King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. It said, "This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those who are carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you. In my name, I have not sent them, declares the Lord. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile." God bless to us that reading from his word. I have a mug with Jeremiah 29 verse 11 written on it. I have issues with the way some people have translated it. There is one particular translation where Jeremiah verse 29 11, or chapter 29 verse 11 doesn't say, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." It says, "Plans to give you the future you hope for." Well, that's massively different from what it actually says. Because the future I hope for and the future God might have in store for me are two completely different things. But God does say that he will give us a future with hope. Well, as he says to the Babylonian exiles, he'll give them a future with hope. That it's not bad. Really interestingly, Jeremiah feels he has to write this letter because there's been a lot of excesses going on. It's fascinating to read when he says they're giving you the dreams that you encourage them to have. Your diviners and your prophets are telling you what you want to hear, because otherwise you will stop listening to them. And they're scared. And they're worried that you won't like them anymore. And they don't think that you'll take the truth if you're told it. That's quite a sad state of affairs. I'm not so sure it's necessarily just confined to that time, though. I think if you look back through history, and even today, you have people that say what they think people want to hear rather than what they really need to hear. You can take all number of subjects, and you can have the church being very, very confident in saying, well, we'll twist everything to make you happy. And that's a really, really bad and dangerous place. You also have mentioned in that particular letter a really interesting thing that we find ourselves in. And again, it's happened throughout history. They're at risk of working against the hand that feeds them. How many times have we looked back, or you can look back through history, have Christians decided that it would be really good to complain about the state? And go, oh, this place, what a dump. Oh, it's dreadful. Isn't it awful? Oh, there's no godliness here whatsoever. Oh, do you know, I've heard sermons on it. But there's a problem. This is where you live. And God's not in a hurry to bring you back, Jeremiah is saying to the exiles. You have to do what you have to do. But for goodness sake, calm down, settle down, marry, give your sons and daughters in marriage, increase in number, don't decrease, and don't say, oh, well, we're just not going to talk to anybody else. Integrate. Be part of the society that you're in. Stay true to God, stay true to your faith, but don't suddenly start saying we're completely different. Throughout history, you have different sections, and it's not just in Christianity. You have different sections of people saying, we're the ones who know all the answers, and we're going to set ourselves apart. And Jeremiah is saying probably some of the wisest words ever. Don't be so stupid. Work for the prosperity of the city or the country, wherever you are, because if they prosper, you prosper. The peace and prosperity of the city, there you go. They prosper, you prosper. If you're going to work actively against the city, guess what? You, who have zero power, are going to be one of the first people crushed. Don't be so daft. If I've sent you to that place, and here's that really fascinating point. If you read verse 7, it says, seek the prosperity, peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Which I have carried you into exile. Not Nebuchadnezzar, I. This is the Lord speaking. I have put you there. And are you telling me that where I've put you isn't good? We can grumble about the situations that we find ourselves in, but it's the situation that God's put us in. And we can be grateful for what we have. It might not feel great, but we can be grateful. Think about what we were saying this morning. Rejoice in that situation, because it's the situation in which God has placed you and he thinks is best for you at that time. Is it always happy and jolly? because life isn't always happy and jolly. And you can't always have good things happening to you all the time. Do you know why? Because you'd never appreciate them if you did. When I'm asked by children, why does God let bad things happen? And why doesn't he just give us all what we want? That's basically my answer. If you would always have what you wanted, you would never appreciate what you had. But he gives this message to them, this famous verse. I've got plans, and it's a future with hope, and you're going to prosper, and I'm not going to harm you, but it's a future, and it's got hope. It's not, go beyond me, I can't be bothered with you anymore, I don't want to see you ever again, don't care what happens to you. It's, I've got plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a future with hope. So imagine you're one of these Israelites, and you have been, you've been placed into exile. You've been moved about 1,500 to 2,000 miles away from where you lived, by an army that don't really like you. And it's not great for you to escape and walk back. Well, what would you walk back to? Everything's been destroyed. And it'd take you an awfully long time to get back there. Are you feeling happy? Or are you feeling despondent? Do you think that God's left you? And see, this is why the people attend, the prophets and the diviners are telling them everything they want to hear. Because the first thing that's going through their minds is these people need a bit of a, you know, a boost. Come on, guys. Keep your pecker up. It's all going to be fine. So God's coming very soon. He'll sort it all out. So you haven't got to integrate. You haven't got to work at where you are. You haven't got to live where you are. What you've got to do is just wait. Give me, like, 5 minutes. He'll be back. He'll be fine. It'll all be fine, and the Babylon will fall, and it'll all be okay. Now put yourself in their position. Which, do you want to hear that message? Of course you do. You want to hear that it's all going to be fine, and it's going to be okay, and actually you're not going to have to suffer for very long, and you know that's going to be. That's not the real world. Sometimes you have to go through suffering. Sometimes you have to go through the pain, and there isn't a determined end. You just have to hope and trust in God. All of the promises that he's made you, as we stand on the promises of God, that he loves you and he won't forsake you, and all of those things you've got to hold on to. Because he's God. And he doesn't lie. He's made these promises. The writer to the Hebrews, as we read in Hebrews 6, makes this statement. He's telling you that you're part of the covenant, that he's made these promises to you so that you can go and grab hold of the hope that is set before you. The writer to the Hebrews is trying to say something very similar to the church. You see, in the church, the early church, there were Christians who believed that Christ was going to return really quick. They thought he was coming back the way he came. He was going to be gone, you know, maybe 5 minutes, and then he was going to come back and usher in the kingdom, and the Roman Empire was going to fall, and it was going to be fantastic. And it was imminent. Well, 2,000 years later, how do you hold on to that hope? You see, we can look back with 2,000 years worth of hindsight and go, well, he never really said that, did he? And we can be very smug and go, well, yeah, but it means this. But what do you do with the people at that point? When they've got this initial hope, where do you say to them? And there are still Christians today who believe, and I keep on being told, that, well, this is the sign of the end, isn't it? Well, I've got news for you. The end was started when Jesus left, and it's up to him when it comes back. But the number, well, you know, this is it, this week, next week, just looking at the signs. My personal thing is please stop reading tea leaves and just get on with what you're here to do, which is to love and to share the gospel with other people, to bring people to give other people hope, to bring people to an understanding and a knowledge of Jesus Christ. That's what you're here for. You know, I had a conversation with someone who was telling me that about 3 years ago that that Jesus was coming back, you know, like within 6 months. So that was 3 years ago, so, you know, well done. Because this was happening and that was happening. And I said, but isn't that really interesting? Because throughout Scripture, or throughout the Gospels, Jesus doesn't say, well, I'm coming back really soon. What he says is, you don't know when I'm coming back, and I don't know when I'm coming back, but what am I going to find when I come? Am I going to find you like the five foolish bridesmaids, with no oil in your lamp and not ready to come to the feast, and the door be slammed in your face because you're not ready? Or am I going to find you like the five wise bridesmaids, doing what you're doing, ready, watching, praying, and making sure your wick is trimmed and your oil's full up so that you can come into the feast and escort the bridegroom in and everyone can have a fantastic party? That is the message of the gospel. That's the message that Jesus gives. And yet we still have people who are very much like the Israelites in exile, going, tell us what we want to hear. Tell me Jesus is coming back tomorrow. Because then, do you know what? If Jesus is coming back tomorrow, I haven't got to do anything. I can just say, well, I've tried my best, and actually, well, you turned up before I could get started. No, it's not about that. Notice what Jeremiah says. He says, plant gardens, build houses, settle down, eat what you produce. You know, if you're going to plant a garden, you're going to eat what it produces. How long does it take to grow a marrow? How long does it take to grow a pumpkin, if you can actually fertilize the blinking things? How long does it take to get a crop? You're going to be here a while. All of that is telling you, you're going to be here a while. And it might not be perfect, but there is a future with a hope. And what an amazing hope that is set before us. But that hope that's set before us, which is we read about in Revelation of the new heaven and the new earth, of there being a kingdom coming where there is no more suffering, there is no more mourning, there is no more weeping, there is no more hunger, there's no more thirst, there's no more loneliness, there's no more any of that. Well, you wouldn't appreciate that if you didn't go through this. Why would you appreciate a kingdom where there is no more hunger if you've never been hungry? Why would you appreciate a kingdom where there is no more thirst if you've never been thirsty? Why would you appreciate a kingdom where there is no more mourning if you've never lost someone? It seems to me that we need to try and put this into the correct words without me sounding harsh. It seems to me that we need to hear the lesson that the those in exile heard, that the early church heard, that we need to continue to hear it. God loves you. He doesn't want to harm you. There is a future. There is an amazing hope. He's bringing it about. It won't necessarily happen like that. So go and plant your garden. eat what it produces, build some houses. Do you want to know how long this is taking? Look at this. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. It's at least three generations there, isn't it? And I've got to wait for my kids to grow up. I can't wait for my kids to grow up. But I've got to wait for my kids to grow up so that they can find sons, other people to marry. And then they've got to have kids so that they can grow up and they can give their children in marriage to other people. I've got to wait for that, and that's going to take a while. Some days I think an interminable amount of time. But that's going to take a while. You've got to live life and allow God to be God. But hold on to the fact that he's never letting you go. That there is a future. And that future is full of hope. It says in the Hebrews passage that we have this hope sure and steadfast, if you read it in the old in the King James Version. We have the, or it says sure and certain in there. But sure and steadfast, like an anchor for the soul. How do you have a hope that is steadfast and sure? It's always confused me. How do you have the sure and certain hope? But a hope is something that I'm hoping for. How do I, if it's a dead cert, how do I do that? But that's the point. Is this hope is so different. It's not, I hope I get a bike for my birthday. I don't particularly want a bike for my birthday before you all start thinking, when's Paul's birthday? Can we get him a bike? Well, that wouldn't mind, but you know. But I could hope for that. Or is this a different hope? This is standing on a promise of God. And when God says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. It just might take a while because it's in his timing, not mine, but he is going to do it. He isn't going to let us go. He isn't going to leave us. So whatever it is we're facing and have been facing and have faced through our lives, he's not letting us go. And he's saying, well, you have faith and just trust in me. Follow me. Put everything on me. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I can deal with it. There's a lovely meme. For those of you who don't know what a meme is, it's a picture with words on it. And they go on the internet. So, but there's this lovely picture with words on it of Jesus, well, supposedly Jesus, carrying a load of luggage, like rucksacks, suitcases, everything. And this guy is completely laden down. And he goes, right, now I've got all your baggage, now will you follow me? The point is we need to just give him our baggage and allow him to deal with that stuff. All he wants us to do is to set our eyes on him and follow him. That's the message of Jeremiah's letter. Trust God. It's going to be fine. Stop pressuring everyone to tell you the stuff that you want to hear. But just trust God. You'll be led astray if you do the things that you think, or if you do the things that you've made other people say to you. Paul says this in one of his letters. He says, those preachers who stand there for itching ears, telling you the stuff you want to hear. And so we have to ask ourselves two questions. One, are we prepared for the truth? Do we want to hear the truth? Because the truth although it sets us free, might not be what we want to hear. Do we want to live in fantasy land, or do we want to live in reality? And if we want to live in reality, then we need to hear the truth, whether we like the truth or not. So that's our first question. Do you want to hear the truth? And with Rose's case, putting her hearing aid in, she will hear whatever I say next. So do we want to hear the truth? And the second question is, are we prepared to live in it? Because living in the truth means dealing with what you've got rather than what you think you should have, and what you, what your hopes that aren't founded on God are. I was listening to a song the other day, and it started with lie one. Thought that was great. Lie one. Everyone else has got it sorted, and their lives are perfect. But yep, that's pretty much lie one. Because they haven't. But how often do we hear that lie? When we're looking at our own lives and going, oh, you know, if only I was like so-and-so. They pray better than me. They've never got any problems. They've got a nice car. They haven't got a worry. They never... Because you've made up an entire story about them by the time you've got... They've never had to worry about where money comes from. They've never had to worry about paying a bill. They've never had to worry about their job. They've never had to put up with someone who's been a horrible pig to them. They've never had to do any of those things. What a load of old rubbish. But you're quite happy to hear it because it's a lie and it affirms you in your self-pity, to be honest. So first of all, are we prepared to hear the truth? And secondly, are we prepared to live in it? And that's essentially what Jeremiah is saying. Here's the truth. Do you want to hear it? Right, now live in it. Settle down. Grow your gardens. Have children. Marry them off. Have grandchildren. Spawn them rotten. Wind them up. Give them back. And all of those different things. But trust God. And just to go back to Rachel's grandmother, the message she wanted everyone to hear: in my 93 years, I have learned to pray and trust God. Now, if we can all get through 93 years and get to that point, and go, do you know what? It comes down to that. Then we'll be doing all right. Because there's two things that would have happened. We've heard the truth, and we've lived in the truth. But we've placed our hope in God.